Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Have you ever asked yourself, I wonder what a video nasty without extreme violence, graphic nudity, explicit gore, and no exploitation sleaze to speak of would look like? Well, congratulations, friends, because on tonight's episode of the Video Nasty Project, we're watching all that and much, much more in Human Experiments. Let's roll the trailer.
This is Rachel Foster, dazzling, defiant.
Sheriff, he's trying to cheat me.
Destined to be free. But somewhere up ahead, someone was waiting.
Hello? Anybody home?
Summer and Edwin Brown present the Gregory Goodell film, Human Experiments.
This just might be what we've been waiting for.
Came in to use the phone. My car got stuck.
See your stay here rather as a short stop along the road, a place to heal and rebuild.
On the table, please.
In 6 months, she'll be a different human being. These things happen, even in the best of prisons.
What happened to Rachel Foster was the ultimate fear. Human experiments. It began as adventure and became a nightmare of unrelenting terror.
Who's there?
It's awfully cold for them down there.
Rita's dead.
You can't tell anyone.
Hi, baby.
Somewhere between medicine and witchcraft. Somewhere between justice and vengeance. Somewhere between progress and the unthinkable. Someone is performing human experiments. Human experiments. Someone is performing.
And thus, that was Human Experiments. And the movie is, when you boil it down, it's your bog-standard women in prison movie.
Although it does have some interesting little, you know, side bits with the experiments going on in the basement. Kind of gets into the filth, the grit, the grime, the dirt, the sleaze, the crap.
So you've got Rachel. And she is this lounge singer, country and western singer, and she's hopping from dive bar to dive bar to dive bar, driving from Florida to California. And she winds up rolling into Bob's cowboy bunker.
Essentially.
Basically.
Essentially Bob's cowboy bunker.
Oh, we got both kinds. We got country and western.
A motel where there's a bar attached to it.
Run by Aldo Ray.
Mm-hmm. Aldo
Ray. He's in the movie for like 2/10 of a second. You blink and you miss him. And so she goes in, does her set. Aldo comes out and starts giving her a little gropey, feely, touchy inappropriateness because...
sleazy.
Flirting with her in a backcountry, tacky sort of way.
Back country roadhouse owner.
She tells him to pound sand, goes back to the hotel room, and settles down for the night.
And you see this low pan of these feet walking along. Then it's like, oh no, this is going to turn into a rape revenge movie, isn't it?
That's what I was thinking.
But of course, nothing happens. But she is in one of these sleaziest, you know, cucaracha infected motels.
Oh yeah, yeah. She goes into the bathroom and there's bugs everywhere. And she's like, ugh.
So next morning, she goes to the front office, gets paid for her set, gets stiffed by, you know, 30% or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's when we get our other guest star, Jackie Coogan.
Yay!
Uncle Fester.
Yay!
So Uncle Fester with this worst glue-on mustache, because it's hanging off, like half hanging off. He's the town sheriff, and he's all like, you know, you best be putting that money back, little honey, or, you know, or we're going to have some issues. And she's like, fuck you, and rolls out. Winds up driving down the road out of Hickstown, lights up a J, and I'm like, oh, in the long list of poor choices that you could be making, smoking dope in the South in the 70s.
And writing your lyrics down on a sheet of paper while you're driving.
Yep, distracted driving.
Which is why she hits that kid that's running in front of her car.
Yeah, like sideswiped her.
Just... mm-hmm.
Knocked her off the road.
Yeah. Puts the car into a ditch, can't get the car out, goes over to the nearest house, and shit happens.
And that's the point. I'm like, okay, so we're doing the Texas Chainsaw Massacre now?
Or Hills Have Eyes.
The Hills Have Eyes. Kind of
thing. Yeah. Because the car in the driveway is the same car belonging to this family who are leaving the motel as she's going to the bar to do her set. And the father is coming down hard on the son, who's like dragging his feet, getting in the car as they leave.
And of course, this has repercussions, the kid being drug off, because of the kid.
Woo! Psycho. He pulls an Amityville Horror kind of thing, you know, just goes around the house and boom!
And guns down the rest of his family. That's when Rachel comes into the house and starts, hello, I need to use your phone, my car's stuck, and I think I hit somebody. She's wandering around, finds dead bodies all over the place, sees the kid kind of clutching his gun, kind of rocking back and forth. She comes in, and he goes for his piece, and she's like much, much faster on the draw and shoots him square in the chest.
And this is kind of plays into the whole foreshadowing thing, because at the beginning, the guy who owns the bar is trying to and failing to shoot a bunch of bottles. And she comes up, takes aim, blam, you know, and squeezes one off and hits the bottle, says, you know, her daddy trained her to be a good shot.
It's Chekhov's gun in the quite literally most literal sense. And then Uncle Fester shows up and, oh my God, there's all this murder and you've just shot the kid and you've got the gun and you're smoking dope. Uh-oh. Mm-hmm.
And the kid gets put into a coma. This is another important point.
Yeah, he's not actually dead. So they arrest her, take her off, and we get this quick kangaroo court scene. Well, actually, we don't even get the scene. We just get voiceovers.
Yeah, just voiceovers as she's being processed. And
that's pretty much where the movie kind of falls off the rails for me. It has the most intriguing opening that I've seen in a very long time on the Nasty List. But then once she gets to the prison, after this kangaroo court...
You got nothing.
I got nothing.
I was very intrigued by the whole opening. And as soon as she's being processed in the prison, I didn't completely lose interest, but I felt it was a lot less engaging and interesting. You've got a bit of a setup with her and one of the major guards, where it looks like the guard is going to be a complete bitch and brutalize her and terrorize her and just not be nice to her at all. But no, the guard's like, just a little bit threatening. Look, this is about respect. And then there's hardly any other stuff involving that guard at all.
I've seen a ton of women in prison movies, and there's not a lot of your typical archetypes that, like, I would expect the bull to be a lot more lesbian and a lot more, sexually abusive of her position, and she doesn't really do that. Yeah. The warden isn't this weird freak.
No, the warden is like one of the most normal women prison wardens in a women in prison movie I've ever seen.
The closest you get to a typical stereotype in the movie is your Ilsa mad scientist doctor in the form of...
Jeffrey Lewis has been one of my favorite actors since probably the late 70s or early 80s is Juliette Lewis's father.
Yeah.
You'll never recognize his name, but you'll go like instantly, it's that dude. Because he is in like two episodes of the A-Team, two episodes of Magnum P.I., four episodes of MacGyver. You know, just this long list of bit parts.
He's one of those guys that would always play baddies really well.
And so the good doctor, he's the one that's running the human experiments. And he has this sort of program where he'll take a couple of prisoners, take them down to the basement, and like do this extensive gaslighting treatment on him to basically break down their mental state into an infant and then rebuild them up as good, upstanding citizens. So it's kind of a shit Levinko technique.
And there's this weird little vibe that he's got going on with the warden. You know, it's not like whether... It's not a sexual thing. She's older than he is, and I don't see any chemistry there. But it's sort of like he thinks he should be the warden, but he doesn't want to do the job. You know, there's a little bit of a power struggle going on there.
And that's one of those ideas that the movie kind of brushes up against lightly and then quickly backs away. The doctor's interaction with, like, the warden and with, like, everybody else. When he goes and he starts gaslighting the prisoners and he starts gaslighting Rachel, she's in the common room with like everybody and somebody comes over and says, hey, you want to see my mouse? And she shows her this mouse.
It's a toy mouse.
Pam, yeah.
No, it's not a toy mouse. When you first see it, it's a real mouse.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
So she shows her this mouse and it's for an instant, this real mouse, and she gets shakes and what, no. And then you see her hand again, and she's holding this toy mouse. So the interesting gaslighting, I mean, is that real? Was she a sleight of hand thing, or is she really going crazy? And then it just drops it and backs the hell away from that.
Or like when she's in her cell one night, and she's having trouble sleeping, and she keeps getting up, and she walks over to the bars, and she looks at one of the adjacent cells, and the inmate there is hung herself.
Yeah, the same thing with the mouse, Pam.
Yeah, and she's completely freaking out over this, as one might expect. And then the next morning, she's gone.
Oh, no, she's been paroled. She's not here anymore. And, yeah, and they just back away from these really interesting ideas without getting into them, and I found that really frustrating.
But they do show her steady mental deterioration to the point where she's involved in a breakout with the lead gardening inmate who says, I'm going to the fence tonight. Are you with me? And they're preparing to go, and she ends up disappearing, and I believe she got killed or something like that.
She looked like she got killed.
Because the whole breakout thing was another example of the gaslighting, because they were just trying to get Rachel off her game and into the room of Bug.
She just goes in fucking sane. I mean, screaming and clawing and bloody, and her head's bleeding and her fingers are bleeding and stuff.
Oh, and it's just, her screams are great. They're not these shrill, high-pitched, stereotypical woman screams. No, they're like roars.
Full-throated, you know,
and feral noises.
Yeah, she's like something out of a Cronenberg movie or some shit. I mean, this is the best scene of the mental breakdown in this entire movie where she just loses it.
And then the important bit after the bugs, and she crawls out through the escape vent into another room, and there's a bunch of people in hoods, and the doctor's there, and they grab her and they drag her up to the scaffold, and they put a noose around her, and they pull the lever, and she dies. And there's another interesting moment that we don't really get an explanation about, because the crawling through the vent, you can kind of see that as her death and her rebirth, and then they take her up and they execute her. So this is kind of this whole weird death-rebirth process.
Well, that was the thought in my mind that when she emerged from the vent, is that her screams were like the infant scream, you know, the infancy when you get pulled from the uterus. That's what I thought exactly of that
scene. Also, she goes very... very meekly up to the noose and helps them put it around her neck.
So that scene was essentially the death of Rachel and the rebirth of her new persona, Sarah.
Yeah. The whole thing with her becoming Sarah obviously was set up in a way that was supposed to make the audience think, oh, well, is this is obviously not real because there's Pam sitting at this table. Though actually, no, she goes into a room after she has been processed and her mind is a blank slate. And the doctor takes her in and says, hello, everybody, this is Sarah. And Pam is there. She's alive. Doesn't have a noose around her neck. Her throat hasn't been, you know, cut or whatever.
Also, her friend from the garden.
Right.
That's one of the key points of frustration for me, is after the breakdown and her being rebuilt as a model citizen. Because they spend all this time in the middle of the movie gaslighting her and basically getting her to that state. And it's this long, slow, very plotting, methodical, and frankly kind of boring bit. And then when they break her down and she dies and Sarah is born, they race through the movie to the end of the movie. It's like 10 or 15 minutes before they roll credits. And there's no... So Sarah, at the end, when she is released from prison, is she Sarah? Is she really back to being normal? Is it kind of this weird hybrid? They don't explore what happened to her mentally.
They imply she's either in a fugue state or she's accepted her Sarah identity. Is at the end. Okay, so she's basically been... The warden gets her file. It says, oh, she was railroaded. The kid snapped out of it. He came out of the coma. He copped to murdering his family. And
confessed, yeah.
And the doctor was like,
uh-oh.
And so he said, no. We'll have to have her live at my house. We'll just keep doing the experiment like nothing's happened. She can live at my place. You can write a false brief. And the warden's like, no, fuck you. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
So he turns Sarah into the fucking Terminator, basically. The splinter, the cell kind of like, what is it, one of those sleeper cell type.
The Manchurian Candidate.
Right.
The doctor turns her, gives her a gun, slips into her purse, and starts telling her, she doesn't love you anymore. She doesn't love you anymore. She doesn't love you anymore.
And all the time using the name Sarah to drive it into her brain. And then when it's time for her to kill the warden says, no, you're innocent. You're being let go. And the doctor's saying, kill her. She doesn't love you anymore. And it's this tug of war. Mm-hmm. And Sarah is starting to kind of ebb out a little bit and be replaced by her former personality a little. I mean, she is obviously, you know, feeling the stress. And boom, misses.
And basically just blows up his office with her handgun.
Yeah.
And then it kind of does this soft dissolve, and we pick up with her at another lounge in another town with, it's got her name Sarah on the, in front of the piano.
Yeah.
So like, is that,
she calls herself Sarah.
Yeah.
And I wish we knew more about what happened to her other than the movie stops.
But one question you can ask yourself is, which is it? Is the whole movie a nightmare of Sarah's, thinking she's somebody else who has nobody, comes from nothing, has been railroaded like that into this prison of horrors surrounded by stereotypes? Or is it she's been railroaded and then the end, she's, her mind is clicked into Sarah mode where she's in this nice place, but in reality she's still in the prison? She's
kind of an end of like Brazil where she just kind of goes catatonic and is in her own brain.
What if the entire prison thing was a result of her having a concussion after she'd smoked too much weed and not paid attention because she was writing her lyrics on a sheet while driving and then wound up in a ditch? What if this is a whole reverie thing in her head?
You know, I can't argue against that point. I mean, we just don't have enough information, and the movie is just weird enough that, I mean, that would explain the mouse turning in from a real mouse into a toy mouse.
Yeah, I kind of didn't know what to expect. You know, the going into it, you know, when she's doing the road trip sequence, I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be like something where she stumbles into some sort of weird psychotic scientist in some isolated place.
I'll give that the movie is, in fact, does have merit, and it is clever in places. Like, the ending could be interpreted that way. There's enough latitude where I could accept your thesis. Or instances like, so the bull is escorting Rachel from the dorms to somewhere. And they're walking along, and there's this flagpole and this plaque next to the flagpole, and it says the prison was built in like 1893 or something like that. She stops and looks at it and starts commenting on it, and the bull comes over and is like, oh yeah, they just built this new facility right on the foundations of the old facility.
Yeah.
Aha, uh-huh, that's a metaphor for her mental state.
Yeah.
One thing I liked that they started to do, but again, to go with your case of they didn't go down various avenues that they could have, was getting into the heads of some of the other inmates. I mean, you've got Granny, who's a really awesome character.
They did that a little bit because after Sarah comes back from her execution and meets all of everybody, nobody is looking at her. They're all kind of looking down here. They're never meeting her eyes.
Yeah.
So they do kind of get into the heads mm-hmm. of everybody else, sort of.
I interpreted that as they know she's being experimented on. Their job is to bring her to the point where she suffers that breakdown. They're not in on it. They're forced to do it. Like Pam, a fake hanging.
If I don't throw you under the bus, I'm going under the bus.
Exactly.
Better you than me. So, like I said, the movie isn't necessarily completely without merits. I did love the scene where the bug room, where you had all the lighting and like just the super close-ups and the way it was edited and the way that it was shot. And the, I mean, just the light and the bugs raining down on her looked really good.
Yeah.
That was a great sequence.
They threw the whole nine yards at her. It was disgusting. I mean, there was just all kinds of stuff, and she's just losing it. Loses her freaking mind. Has to push at that grating. Her tips of her fingers are bloody. It's just like, Jesus, the look on her face with the oh, God.
Or like there was the bit where she's in the cell, and like she opens it and kind of tentatively steps out in the middle of the night, and like just the like shafts of light illuminating her as she goes down into the corridor. So stuff like that, it was clever, and it was well shot, just not all the way to my satisfaction. So do you have anything else left to
say? Nah, I'm done.
So I guess that's an episode then.
Okay. Well. Right.
So the human experiments, were they appropriately left off the list?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think so.
I think the words are you were looking for is fuck no.
This is a really sanitary movie in many regards.
This is the most unsexy women in prison movie I've ever seen. No sleaze, no rebellious activity, no rampant nudity, no lesbianism.
I mean, maybe a cable movie. You know, not public, not national TV, but HBO. I mean,
in all the research that I've done, as near as I can tell, the only reason this movie got nabbed was because the word experiment was in the title. That they thought maybe it was a Nazi exploitation movie.
You could, if you stretched it a little bit, make it into a Nazi place, a Nazi
except for the one black guard in the place, who I don't think would be there.
But otherwise, this is unsleazy, unsexy, mm-hmm.
Ungraphic.
Ungraphic,
yeah.
So, off the list, acquitted all around.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Kind of like the main character at the end.
So, did you dig on the human experiments?
I loved it. This is
holy shit, you loved it?
It had some interesting pacing. It was well shot. I liked the prison. The prison, as it turns out, used to be a youth correctional facility. So they were actually in a real prison. There was some good character interaction, good chemistry between a lot of the characters. Like the woman in charge of gardening, the old lady, the prostitute. There was real creepiness when she enters the house.
Yeah. You know, I cannot argue against all those points. I guess it's just this middle bit that's so flabby and does nothing just kind of kills the momentum.
That's a lot how I feel about it, too. I felt that the beginning was really strong and the ending was moderately strong. And the middle was just like creamy whipped filling that really didn't need to be there.
So it basically suffers from a little bit of flabbiness, cinema flabitis, I guess, or something.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, another couple of passes on the script, another pair of eyes on the shoot, it would have been a stronger movie.
Yeah. There are several places that could have tightened this up. But on the other hand, it's pretty enjoyable in many regards.
Yeah, but it's basically, if you want to watch a woman in prison film that doesn't necessarily offend to the point where you want to turn it off, you watch this. If you're looking for pure exploitation of the type that's going to piss somebody off, then you watch
the Big Bird Cage,
White Mama, Black Mama, Caged Heat 1 through 50. You know, Ilsa, any of the Ilsa movies or any of those Nazi films.
No, Reform Schoolgirls.
There you go.
But yeah. Yes, I would go and watch The Big Dollhouse any day of the week above this.
This is one of the kinds of women in prison movies, or the kinds of, you know, person in deep shit movies that I dig. I mean, this woman gets thrown into the shit for no reason other than self-defense. Wrong place, wrong time. She gets dug deeper and deeper and deeper into the shit until you think she's going to drown.
I will give you that the movie is not entirely without merit, but the problem is I thought it was so frustrating because it had all these really good ideas and it just never stuck the landing.
Oh yeah, I mean, I got that. I still love the hell out of this movie, the same way you loved last week's when I thought it was kind of meh, you know, for various reasons. I mean, the why did the kid nut out just because his dad was being rough on him? And then he decides to, you know, do the dirty deed on the entire fucking family. Why? They should have gone into that. But, you know, maybe that's for another movie. I don't know.
Man, I just thought it was a pedestrian... mediocre. Women in prison flick. I mean, it started very strong, but about 30 minutes into it, it just fell off the rails and just turned into nothing for me. So, I gotta go thumbs down, man.
I think I'd have to say meh. I enjoyed this, but I wouldn't say I liked it enthusiastically.
So yeah. It looks like we've got the full spectrum on this one.
The full spectrum decision again. Enthusiastically likes, meh, and can't stand it.
All right.
All right. Say goodnight, everybody.
Goodnight, everybody. Gracie.
Oy, oy, oy. That's Human Experiments. Back on the shelf. Oh, I'm sorry for the rough patch, fellas, because next week, it's not any better. Next week is I Love You Hugs and Kisses, a.k.a. Drop Dead Dearest. Another movie that probably would have been completely forgotten if not for this list. So, in the meantime, you, right now, send me an email, thevideonastyproject@gmail.com, and tell us how much you loved Linda Hayes, how much you're looking forward to next week, or just tell us to fuck off, because I get those occasionally. And stay evil!
Eat your potatoes, Rita. Eat your mashed potatoes. Rita...